We're doing Pirkei Avot with the commentary of Rabbeinu Yonah. We learned the Mishnah where Hillel said, "Marbe vasar, marbe rima." He who has more flesh will have more vermin consuming him ultimately. Marbe nechasim, marbe daga. He who has more assets has more worry. Marbe nashim, marbe chashafim. If he has more wives, he will end up using more potions. We discussed the aphrodisiacs, etc. Marbe shpachot, marbe zima. If he has more maids, there'll be more promiscuity in his home. Marbe avadim, marbe gazel. If he has more servants, he will have more theft. Each one tries to siphon something from him. So Hillel first pointed out to us that if you go beyond the balance, again, the stress here is the marbe. He's not saying not to have servants. He's not saying not to have assets. He says, just realize that when you have too much, it comes with a cost. And ordinarily, we look at the benefit. We don't look at the cost. Hillel was coming to point out the cost. On the contrary, Hillel says, "Marbe Torah, marbe chaim." If you have extra, you have a lot of Torah, so that adds life. Marbe, he who adds Torah, marbe chaim is adding life. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, "Zeh adavar keneged ma shamar, marbe vasar, marbe rima." Rabbeinu Yonah says that this line in Mishnah corresponds to the first line in Mishnah. Hillel gave us 5 examples of things that when taken to the excess, they detract from a person. So now he's going to give us examples that correspond and show us how you can benefit. So Marbe Torah corresponds to Marbe Basar. Whereas in the beginning of the Mishnah he said if one is more corpulent, he has more fat, so then he will ultimately be more feed for vermin. So then here he says, Marbe Torah, he who adds Torah, Marbe Chaim, is adding life. Shal yadei ta'anug yitkatzru yamav. When a person focuses on amenities and life, he should beware that that detracts from his life. Al yadei amal b'Torah, and by working hard on Torah, yarichun, he has longevity. The question here is, does he mean in the physical sense? Because you know the story, I think it was the Rebbe of Gur, who passed away at a young age, and when the kids came back from the funeral, as they sat down to sit Shiva, so one kid said to the other, "Abba he'erich yamim." Abba had long days. So the brother looked at him and said, "What do you mean, he died young?" And he said, "I didn't say he lived a long life. I said he had long days. He packed in so much into a day. He had arichut yamim. He stretched out each day. He got the maximum out of each day." So I don't know when the Rabbi Yonah here writes that the work of Torah grants longevity, whether he literally means it gives you a longer life. I don't know.
Probably like Abraham and Sarah, they came with their days.
You know, they
really lived. That's my original thing.
This also corresponds to what he said in the beginning of the Mishnah, that having too much assets will increase one's worries. Because one of the things that shortens a person's life is worry. So when a person worries over his assets, that's going to shorten his life. And even though there's worry in learning Torah too, when you learn Torah, if you really understand what's going on, so that stresses a person, it takes a lot out of him. A person has to think until he can get it right. Guys, I could tell you, I'm in this scenario right now, it's about 2 weeks now, that there's halacha and the laws of Shabbos I can't figure out, and I just gave up yesterday. I didn't give up, I just put it on pause till God will grant me the intelligence to understand.
What is the question?
in the laws of Shabbos, it says that if you put seeds, for example, if you're going kernels of corn or seeds of wheat, if you put them in a glass of water, so then that's a biblical transgression of planting. Yet it also says that you're allowed to put branches in a cup of water on Shabbos. You're allowed to take myrtle branches. So long as there aren't flowers, you're allowed to put them in a cup of water. So why is it that it's biblically prohibited to put a seed of any plant that will grow in water? If you put it in water, that's a biblical prohibition. And yet when you put a branch, that's not a biblical prohibition. So my experience is that branches do grow in water. And they knew planting more than I do. Now, the Talmud, the Mishnah already says you're allowed to put a lulav in water. Now, a lulav is not going to grow in water. When you put a lulav in water, all you're doing is retaining its moisture. But when you put a branch in water, that branch can now live. So I don't understand. I have all kinds of theories, but no one seems to be bothered with the question, which makes me wonder even more. What am I missing?
Most people aren't aware of the question.
Okay, but the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch are aware of it. Mishnah Brura, Magen Avraham, the Taz, the Gra, everyone's aware of it. The Beis Yosef, to them it's not a question. So that means I'm missing something, and I don't know what I'm missing yet. So for about 10 days I've been searching, and last night I finished my search from my end. For now, it's on pause. Okay? But that's upsetting. You learn and you work. You know, in the Rambam, there's a line in Rambam where the Rambam says the 13 attributes, the 13 laws of derivation, and ribui. And for over a decade, I couldn't figure out why the Rambam writes that, and ribui. Isn't ribui one of them? Ribui means an encompassing, a word that's encompassing. And after a decade, I found the answer. So, coming back here, I'm saying sometimes things learning Torah can also take some emotional energy out of you. We'll talk. In yecholet ladaga hi lasot lo ra. Rabbeinu Yonah says the worry of learning Torah will not be able to harm a person. Afal pi shamu chachmei teva heigon choli halev v'adaga hu kalut halev. Even though the naturopaths will tell you that sorrow is an illness of the heart, sorrow affects the heart, and worry is what finishes the heart. Okay, so today they also say that. Sorrow and worry. You know, a person can die of heartache. Yes, that affects a person. But he whose worries are in Torah and is learning, that will ultimately only give him more longevity. About this King Solomon said, Yirat Hashem tosif yamim, ushnot Hashem tiktzona. Fear of heaven only adds life, and the years of the wicked are shortened. Okay, I think it's pretty self-understood that Rabbeinu Yonah was talking in a healthy sense. There's a very interesting book that was written by a psychologist who's still alive today. He used to write letters to the Stipler, Rav Chaim Kanievsky's father. And he would ask him questions about psychology. He would have religious patients. And he wrote letters back and forth. He transcribed. He used to live in Muncie, New York. And he transcribed with the Stipler. They would have. He would write him his questions, and he would give him long answers, and he would discuss with him from a Torah perspective. How do you help a person cure his soul? How do you help a person cure himself emotionally? And after all the years of writing back and forth, he put it together in a book, a very, very interesting book. What you see there is that people can take Torah off kelter. You know, people can take the words of Torah of being a God-fearing person and then become ADHD and blame it on Torah. You know, suddenly a person's super worried. Am I filling in the middle? Wait a second, are they still in the middle? Can you check again for me? You know, a person can be obsessive, compulsive about Torah and blame it on religiosity. You know, in the name of religiosity. Rabbi Feinstein once told me, if you have a person who checks his tefillin three times a year, don't assume he is super religious. First check if he also checks if his front door is locked five times a night. You know, it could be that he's a nervous person, so everything he does he's nervous about. That's not religiosity. That's being a nervous person. The Torah doesn't want us to be nervous people. The Torah wants us to be calm people. People can take the Torah and become very nervous about it. It's interesting that the Torah expects us to be calm about the Torah. So, coming back here, Rabbeinu Yonah says, Torah will grant you longevity. Torah will grant you life. The worries of Torah shouldn't harm you. Yeah, that's assuming you maintain a balanced perspective on Torah. When a person can be nervous about everything, then they can really, through Torah, become imbalanced. It says in the Shulchan Aruch that if a person learns Torah and doesn't rest, then through the Torah he will go insane. It says in Shulchan Aruch, in Aruch Haim, it says a person has to take a break so that he doesn't go crazy from his learning. You see, even from Torah, a person can harm himself if he takes things to an unhealthy extreme. Yes. Aviel, yeah.
Come back again to this longevity. If it's not defined properly, it can lead to all kinds of misconceptions, as you said. I mean, if you've been looking at people who die at, God forbid, 29, 30, 35, lots of sages, great people, accomplished amazing things. So, and you can live to 90, 100 and never really live. And I think it has to be taken that way, because if it's literally taken, you know, yes, it's conceivable to be granted extra years. There are sources that will say that, you know, Adam Mauricio gave up. Yeah. Mel walked there right there. They gave extra years because of righteousness. This correlation between learning Torah and long life, you get the wrong idea, like an ATM machine. You know, you put in mitzvahs, you get out good shidduch, you get out good health. It doesn't work that way.
Okay, so let's. I can say many things, but one of the things I'm trying to do is be true to the text. And I have to work with what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, not what Nathanael Frankenthal would say. I gave an explanation that I'm not confident is what Rabbeinu Yonah meant. I would add one more point. Whenever we speak about things like this, where Chazal give us formulas, and they say you do X, you get Y. So the classical example that Rav Shlomo Fisher once said, is like the doctors tell you, don't eat a lot of mayonnaise, it's high in cholesterol, don't eat too many eggs, it's high in cholesterol, and people who do will have heart disease, don't smoke, etc. You come to a doctor and you say, but you know, so-and-so, he eats a diet high in cholesterol, and he's fine. And they tell you, yeah, that's because in his diet, it's a Mediterranean diet, and he has a lot of the hummus, and he has a lot of the red wine, and he has other things that balance out the good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, everything's great. So you say, oh, so it's not an absolute formula that if you do A, you get B. And the doctor will tell you, right, in general, A affects you this way and B affects you that way. We say the same thing here. When it says a lot of Torah will give you more, a lot of life, so then the assumption is, but wait, you see people who have a lot of Torah and they die young. The Arizal didn't live such a long life. He didn't make it to 40, right? So what does that mean? So then we say, like the doctor says, this is one component which will affect you this way. There are a lot of components. You should know that this component has this effect. That doesn't mean that bottom line, the resultant will be you'll live a longer life. That, I think, would be truer to the text of what Rabbeinu Yonah said. Yes?
I have a question.
On this point?
Yes.
Okay.
You had mentioned that the Torah doesn't want us to be nervous people. It wants us to be calm people. And when we're looking at the halakhot, and just, I guess, Yirat Hashem, everything, all these concepts in general, at first glance, maybe I'm more than, even further than first glance, maybe the first many glances, or maybe whatever, a lot of the halakhot and these concepts seem very external to us, and therefore, would you say that, this is correct, I guess, that because it seems external to us, oh, you know, I have to tie my shoe a certain way, et cetera, or all of a sudden, you know, there is a God in the world, and he's going to judge us when we die. All these things are what causes the nervous, because the Torah is seeming external to us, whereas the Torah wants us to be calm, meaning that wants it to be internal to us, to where it's just our natural movements, our natural conception of life, or any day-to-day matters, will be those according to the philosophies of Torah, and therefore it's internal to us, where it's, and if that assessment is correct, how does one get there? Because if you learn too much, you just, as if it's external to you, you just get overly obsessively compulsive and nervous. So what's the right deal about that?
I want to answer you, but I want to apologize to everyone here. I want to answer you, but on condition that you all forgive me if I slight anyone in my answer. Are we agreed?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes, anyone who might be slighted should not stick around for the next. If you're sticking around, no, it's on the record. If you're sticking around, it's with the understanding that even though I'm going to say things that might make some of you uncomfortable, you'll forgive me. I know it's being filmed. The question that was just asked is super relevant in this classroom, because the tendency of a person who is chozer b'tshuva is to take the words of the Torah and apply them in an unnatural way, and then a house that's run based on Torah after a person does tshuva can very often choose between two options: either being lackadaisical in the observance of Torah, or being uptight all the time about Torah. So we had at our Seder a bunch of people, and during the Seder, one of the kids said to me, "Abba, I'm having a hard time drinking the third or fourth cup of wine." So I said, "That's okay, you want, just take a sip, whatever you want." And one of the people there was a chozer b'tshuva, and he came to me the next day, and he said to me, "You know, you blew me away at the Seder." I said, "Which Dvar Torah?" He said, "None." I said, what blew you away?" He said, "When your son told you that he was having a hard time drinking the fourth cup, you told him that's fine." He said, "I would have never known to tell my son that." And I felt so bad when he said that to me. He said to me, "You know, I'm running a Seder. I feel like I'm giving my kids tradition. This is all what Judaism is all about. So what does that mean? He can't have a fourth cup. What's the big deal?" I'd sit there and argue with him, and I'd tell him, "You know, when you're thirsty, you can drink as much as you want. And on any other day, when I don't let you have four cups, then you always want four cups." But, you know, and you didn't even argue with him. He said, "It's hard." You said, "Okay." He said that was the biggest lesson for him that moment at the Seder. So that really struck me. It struck me because it reiterated this concept which you're saying. When a person does tshuva at a later age, so then things are not as natural for a person. And then a person feels like he can either be lax in his observance of Torah or be uptight. Those are not the two choices. There is a middle of the road choice. Now it's very hard to take that choice, because if you didn't grow up with this, like you correctly pointed out, so then it's new to you, and then you don't know how seriously to take each thing and where you could be lenient. And that's where it's very important to go to people's houses. Watch how a regular family does things, how calm things are, you don't have to be uptight to be observant. And try to learn from that. You have to try to learn from that, because those are not the two choices, and they're not the right choices. A person shouldn't be lax, and a person shouldn't be uptight. A person should be happy and calm about Torah, and the kids should be happy and calm about Torah. You know, our 3.5-year-old spoke to my wife last night, and they're standing outside, she's hanging laundry, and she says to him, "Look at the beautiful moon." And he says, "That's mine." So my wife says, "What do you mean it's yours?" So he says, "God spoke to me and said that if I do what he wants, he's going to give me the moon. So it's mine." So we were floored, because he started learning Bereishis, and he learned about the moon and the sun, and that God talks to the moon and talks to the sun. So now, if God could talk to the moon and could talk to the sun, he could talk to Shlomo too. And if God could tell the moon and the sun what he wants, and then he could tell Shlomo too. So it's very simple. He looks at my wife and says, "He's mine." You know, very simple. So I thought that was beautiful. You know, he took the Torah and, you know, he made it work his way. Now, I could also imagine a parent getting all uptight at a kid and saying, "Don't lie. Hey, what are you mixing things up? This has nothing to do with you. It's not yours. What are you doing to the kid? He's allowed to be a kid. He's allowed to say it's his. Nothing happened." So sometimes, like you said, when it's unnatural, when people are new to it and they take things out of proportion, then they can really lead uptight lives. Much of that work that I quoted earlier is discussing this problem. That's why I added that footnote. Much of that work, the Stifler is telling him, tell people to be calm. I remember we had a guy who wasn't completely balanced in one of the yeshivas I was learning in, and he wasn't completely balanced. He came to the Rosh Yeshiva, who wrote many works in halacha, and the Rosh Yeshiva told him, he said to him, "I want to tell you what your mitzvah is." Guys, listen closely. If I didn't hear it with my own two ears, I wouldn't believe this. He said to him, "Your mitzvah is to adopt every leniency you could find in halacha." That's your mitzvah. So the Rosh Yeshiva was right. This guy ended up in a mental institution. Meaning he was so uptight, he took things so seriously, so this was a way to go crazy. He found his outlet, and in a bad way. And he literally flipped out. I remember the Shabbos afternoon, he started running around naked saying he was Mashiach. Okay, the guy ended up in a mental institution. So the Torah gives us a balanced, happy way to go through life. It's true that when a person's new to it, so then everything seems difficult. That's where a person needs a Rebbe. That's where a person needs to emulate the people he sees, the normal people he sees. A Rebbe will hopefully help a person take perspective. It's not so important to tie your right shoe before your left shoe, or you guys are righties, your left shoe before your right shoe. I'm a lefty. It's not so important. I know it says it in Shulchan Aruch, but that's not the first thing you have to worry about. Lashon Hara, there, that's important. Keeping Shabbos, keeping kosher, that's important. It's not so important to eat abadat sechsher. Your friend is making a wedding and it's Rabbanut, go enjoy it. Ah, but I heard, so you heard, so what? But for you it makes you uptight. Let's keep things at a regular plane. We have a student here who has already finished a sizable amount of Shas. And in conversation a few weeks ago, it came up that he eats any hechsher. So, you know, the guy's already holding at a very nice level, you know. He's already finished many works. And he said to me, Rabbi, you told me years ago that for 10 years I should eat any Orthodox hechsher. I'm listening to you. I was so impressed. Maybe that's why he's finished most a nice part of Shas. Because he's not too uptight about a lot of things. Years ago, it must have been 5-6 years ago when he was here a student. I said it like I say to you guys. Stick to the basics. Orthodox hechsher is good. You'll grow in 10 years. We'll talk again. Right now, anything Orthodox is good for you. Stick to that. Get used to eating kosher. Okay, so he wasn't uptight about that. And you take off a lot of the things that make people uptight unnecessarily. So then you can focus on true growth. And things can be balanced. You're right. It's not easy. That's why I said I hope I'm not offending anyone. Because the truth is it's harder for you guys than anyone else. If you can get it, then it'll be easier for your kids. If you can get it, and it's not easy. That's where I always say, the greatest teacher you can have is not here in Mechon Meir. It's when you go out for Shabbatot. We can teach you the theory, but the actual practice of living an Orthodox lifestyle in a calm, balanced way, you can learn by being guests at normal Orthodox families. You'll see each family is some you learn from, some you don't. I prefer, don't go to a Chozer B'Tshuva family because I don't know who they learned by. You know, there's this shtick that's for some reason Chozer B'Tshuva like. That Matzei Shabbos, after they do Havdalah, they put on a pan, either kerosene or vodka, and they light it. And then the kids watch as you play with fire. Okay, I saw it, a few people doing it. It's not an ancient custom. I never saw anyone whose grandparents were Orthodox do it. I saw Chozrim B'Tshuva do it. Okay, very nice. The only problem is there's a child in Harnof that doesn't have a face because they did it. And by mistake, someone walked by and it spilled on his face and they couldn't put out the fire. So is it worth it? It's a shtick. It has no basis, you know. You lit your candle, you made Avdallah. Kid in Arnof today, living and walking around in Arnof, doesn't have a face, all melted. The father didn't know how to put it out. There was no way to put it out. By the time they figured out how to put it out, there was no face left. Okay, so that's why he's right. You're going to go to someone. I don't want you to pick up shtick that has nothing to do with Judaism. You know, you got to pick up what leading a regular, balanced life is, and it's not easy. It's not easy. It is probably the greatest hardship that a Chozer B'Tshuva has. So that's why I apologized before I addressed it, but I do think it's something to learn. And it's a lesson in and of itself. But if learned correctly, it's probably the most worthwhile lesson. Because then it takes all of Judaism and gives it a beautiful flavor.